Happy New Year and welcome back to the Technology Whisperers with me, Alistair Ross, and my host,
Sean Muller. Welcome back to season three.
Hey,
we're now
Sean.
On season three.
I know.
Of the Technology Whisperers. I'm so excited about us kicking off into this new year. I know you and I have been swamped busy since almost the first week of January?
Yeah, January 8th, it really just kicked
yeah.
me. I was like doing my own sweet thing, enjoying life. I was up in the Bay of Islands and everything was just super chill up there. It's like going away to Rarotonga or somewhere and you're just on island yeah. time and, you know, just everything, just all your troubles fade away. And then I got back and I was straight into it. Like it
yeah.
just hit me like a freight train. So yeah, there's no such
yeah,
thing
been...
as a holiday.
It's yeah, it's and I've been going nonstop as well. And it's one of the reasons that we wanted to have season three already kicked off by the end of January, but work hasn't slowed down and it's actually sped up a little bit. So this episode, season three, we're going to kick it off. We're going to talk a little bit about what happened last year. We're going to try and sum it up a little bit, maybe touch on some things that have been happening in the last 2 months.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And this season, with potential a few sponsored spots, so if you'd like to sponsor the podcast, get in touch,
yep.
let us know. But if not, then this season's sponsored by Revolution InfoSec, which
yep.
is a cybersecurity business that yours truly runs. And it's here in Wellington, all over New Zealand, in fact. We help you out with all things cybersecurity. So if you'd like to know more about Revolution InfoSec, then get in touch with either of us and love to help you out on your cybersecurity journey. But we won't talk about that right now. We'll talk about all the other things.
Alistair, so I do want to back up because this is actually important to me for content creation, right? Look, Revolution InfoSec, your company, but you're not a sole owner. I mean, it's a corporation. They're sponsoring this podcast. That's massively important in this industry. So generating this content, if you guys enjoy the podcast, nobody pays us. If you listen to it, nobody pays us. There are companies and podcasts that do paywalls that you have to go through the paywall to get to the podcast. Technology Whisperers will never be a paywall-based podcast. So, I mean, there are costs associated with that. Hosting the podcast, recording the podcast, we pay a producer to produce the podcast to make sure that it sounds professional. And so I think it's really massively important that Revolution InfoSec gets mad props for sponsoring this. So I know I put you on the spot there, Alistair, but that wasn't intentional. But I do want, you know, the listeners need to understand that there is a cost to it. And you know, even you're in my time, I was looking at it the other week. I spend probably 20 to 30 hours every couple weeks looking up stuff that we end up talking about on the podcast. And that's time that I could be spent working on something else. And I know that you do the same.
Yeah, time is money, man.
yeah.
No, but to echo your sentiment, absolutely. You know, I think the Technology Whisperers was born out of two things. I think a passion and also a need. So talking about the passion, first of all, I mean, you and I both have, you know, strong interests in a couple of areas. And those areas we do talk about quite a lot on this podcast. One, cybersecurity, and then two, also AI and machine learning. But those things aside, we also talk about a whole other bunch of topics. And I think the gamut of all of that coming together really talks about the reason why we do this podcast. And the reason why, and we'll talk about this a little bit later in the podcast, but the reason why is all about demystifying technology.
Yeah.
And our audience, yeah. you know, really does cover everybody from CEOs right down to, you know, people who are just starting out in IT. And I think, you know, what's always been really important to both you, Sean, and to me is that IT has, you know, especially back in the day, but even today, has been seen as a really geeky thing, no matter whether you're in
yeah.
cybersecurity or whether, you know, you're just, you know, you're a system admin or whatever your job may be.
Yeah.
But there's always
yeah.
this sort of stigma of geekiness, and there's all sorts of buzzwords and tech all over the place. And it really can get very, very confusing, even for people who have been in tech for a long time.
Yeah.
And what we yeah. want to do is just demystify all of that. Just take it down to its bare bones. Just, you know, call the technology out for being what it is. Like I remember a recent podcast we did on quantum computing. Now that is hellishly technical,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
and I think it takes somebody who understands the topic pretty well, gets all of that or groks all of that technology, yeah, and really can distill it into plain English. And so that's exactly what we're doing. And Sean, you were the guy who did that. Like, my knowledge of quantum mechanics, quantum physics and quantum computing is pretty small, but you've got a much better knowledge than me. And so you were able to take all of that technical knowledge and really distill it down into something that made a lot of sense to the layperson.
Well, look, I think it's important to call out. I know that you and I were working for a company when we first started this, and the company under Stu Spears at the time was very supportive of us and did sponsor us a little bit, but it really was a labor of love. This was a passion project for years of mine. And I'll be honest, I didn't know that we were going to get all the way to season three before you and I got so busy that we or bored or ran out of topics or whatever you want to say. So the fact that we made it to season three, we're 3 years in, Alistair. We've been doing this for 3 years.
Yeah. And it's been 3 great years. Really enjoyed it, Sean. I've really enjoyed, you know, obviously working with you on this, but also the participation that we've had from you, the listeners. Really, really have enjoyed that that feedback. That's been great.
Oh, and the fabulous guests that we've had on over the last 2 years.
Forget the fabulous guests,
Sean.
Oh,
my God. Jeez. So bringing us up to speed, 2023. Wow. What? I mean, if you had asked me in June, July, what we were going to be talking about in 2024, about what happened in 2023, I would have been like, yeah, we're going to talk about a little bit of ChatGPT. And obviously there's some stuff in ChatGPT. But the stuff that happened in the second half of last year actually makes it feel like it was a whole nother year after July.
Yeah. And the thing is, as well, like some of the stories that were out in 2023 weren't just like newsworthy or newsworthiness. Some of them were just downright crazy. I mean,
I mean,
I'm not going to cover them in this show, but there's this desktop, and this is just one example of things that are crazy. Yeah. There's a desktop environment in the Linux operating system. So really geeky stuff here. But this is the sort of year we had in 2023. They decided to hire a new, so the GNOME desktop environment, this is how crazy the year was. They hired a new CEO or appointed a new leader, and the leader was a shaman, which, you know, if you'd have said in any other year other than 2023, head of GNOME project is shaman who sells shaman water, that would probably have just, you know, it would have been made up. There was the firing of the top executive of the SUSE Linux project for doing dodgy deals. There was just a whole bunch of weird things like that. And you go, that's just scratching the surface. But and we had, of course, let's just talk topical, OpenAI, right? The biggest news of the year 2023. And we had that whole debacle, right, with Sam Altman, right?
Yeah. Well, and who would have thought that the result of that would have been Sam comes back and the whole board of directors that fired him goes away. Any year but 2023, I would have said, But a massive.
It just went from weird to weirder to absolutely insane. Yeah, that's even in the course of all companies, not just IT companies, to get fired by a board and then somehow weasel your way back into a company and then fire that board.
Yeah.
That story.
It's unheard of.
Unheard of. Absolutely.
Potentially one of the most valuable companies in the world. So we're not even talking about, you know, some little rinky dink or even a startup company that's early days startup. OpenAI has been around several years now, and it, you know, valued massive valuation on the company, massive investment on Microsoft. The stunning thing for me was the Microsoft insisted that they have a member that sits on the board, but is a non-voting member. I was like, Microsoft, one of the largest IT companies in the world, want somebody sitting on OpenAI's board, but not as a voting member?
Yeah.
It was a whole lot of stuff going on.
Yeah. And so am I correct in saying, Sean, that we still don't know 100% why Sam Altman was fired by the board?
You know, the news articles are...
It's complicated.
And the information that's, you know, is slowly leaking out. The employees pitched this idea that everybody was behind Sam Altman and everybody was happy about it. Now it's coming to light that maybe there are some members of the employees that were not quite as happy with Sam Altman and the way that he operated. There does seem to be some social political turmoil between the board and Sam Altman and some differing views on how the company should go. So the big news story potentially for 2024, GPT-5, and whether or not artificial general intelligence, even in a very immature sense, actually comes to light. The news articles in the last month from interviews with Sam Altman have swung wildly from GPT-5 will be artificial general intelligence to GPT-5 will be okay. It'll be a little bit better than GPT-4.
Yeah.
And from the same guy, two different interviews from the same guy and wildly different description of what it's going to be.
Yeah, sometimes when he's being interviewed, he seems like he's this really switched on, super intelligent guy who's just at the next level. And then it's almost like a day later, he'll go in into another interview and it's like his brain got unplugged
or he
had no sleep or whatever the reason may be. But he just has widely different sort of responses and it's very difficult to understand the guy.
You can't really talk about Sam Altman and OpenAI without talking about his new chip manufacturing company, which leads into that second topic that we need to touch on, which is, okay, chip manufacturing and distribution worldwide is going into turmoil right now. The political, let's talk about the geopolitics of it. China is again making, motions about Taiwan, where 80% of the chips for the Western world are manufactured. South Korea is upping their chip manufacturing. China and Russia, the U.S. has now blocked any exports of chips to them, but somehow the logistics trains still get through and there are still chips going in. Manufacturers in the U.S. are now no longer allowed to use China-manufactured chips for certain things. Yeah, and plus we have all the logistics shipping seems to be thrown into turmoil right now.
Yeah, so we've got like the Panama Canal, which is drying up, or got some problem with all the locks in Panama Canal. And then there's another waterway, which I can't remember the name off right at the top of my head, but basically it's being bombarded by sort of terrorists and pirates, basically.
Really? Suez. It was the Suez Canal.
That's right. Yeah. So we had a really wild geopolitical and technological confluence here. It's really, all of a sudden, I can't think of a time where in my living history that sort of a situation has happened where both technology and geopolitical aspects have intertwined as much. So we've got chip manufacturing, sure. And if we look at what's happening in the Ukraine, they're building drone technology just out of over-the-counter standard drones and using that to weaponize against the Russians.
And weaponizing them. Yeah.
And then we have the Russians, of course, like you said, using chips, which are American branded chips, so Texas Instruments and Intel and various other chips, they're using these on, cruise missiles.
Yeah.
So how are they? And obviously the US government is absolutely no way you can't buy these chips. Russia, there's a trade embargo, no chance. But then what's happening is there's all these sort of shell companies that are being set up by people, and they're basically taking different transit routes. So you're going to one country, then another middleman's involved and they're selling it on to another country. And then it's going in that way into the back door, into the Russian Federation through shell companies there who are part of the Russian government, right? So it's really, really interesting to see that in action. And there's just so many of these sorts of stories which have just started up right around now as well.
Absolutely right. And then if we take a look at R&D, so what was it, 3 years ago, Intel and AMD both said that we were approaching the maximum number of
the transistors?
Essentially transistors that they could put on a processor and that they were going to actually have to increase the footprint. Now Intel and AMD both have released information that they're now layering it in a different way. Their R&D coming to light that they may be building copper-based processors that they can get even smaller essential transistors onto. Every single hardware manufacturer is looking at releasing ASIC chips. The iPhones are coming with AI chips on them now. Apple releases their new augmented reality that is really just a virtual reality goggle with eyeballs
Vision Pro. So let's talk about the Vision Pro for a second then. So we're obviously going through whole bunches of new technology in a way that's we've been kind of expecting to happen for a few years now. So let's just say 4 to 5 years, we've been talking about augmented reality, virtual reality. We've talked about quantum computing. We've talked about, this ways to break to continue with Moore's Law. And Moore's Law was, you know, the, one of the originators of Intel, and who said that, you know, the technology on a the transistors on a piece of silicon wafer on a chip would basically double every year. And we got to that point where we said, hey, that's not going to happen anymore, because literally we can't make it smaller, you know?
Yeah.
So what you've just said there is that basically all of these things are actually coming to fruition now. So Apple Vision Pro, it's Apple's vision of how the augmented / virtual reality world is. And I've seen some early reviews of the product, and some of them are quite favorable, and some of them are not at all. And so it's quite interesting to look at that. And then obviously you've got Facebook or Meta doing their thing. And they're saying that, look, there's going to be this metaverse and this world. And they're going off on their way, right? And Apple are sort of saying, well, no, basically what we're going to do is we're going to just take the world that you compute in right now and strap a bunch of goggles on your face and that's the way. So they've got very different ways of doing this same technology.
Well, I want to say it was Meta is investing in it as well, but for anybody that reads science fiction or watches science fiction movies, the Readyverse, which is a virtual reality world based on Ready Player One and Ready Player Two, the two science fiction novels, has been announced, and that they've started developing it. Yeah, I've seen most of the reviews on the Apple Vision Pro as well. There's not any groundbreaking technology in it. Apple did what they usually do, which is they made it slicker, they made it more user-friendly, they did some hardware things with it, but at the same time, it's heavier than anything from Meta.
Yeah.
So it sits heavier on
your face.
You
don't want to sit with that on your head for too long. And it's got that big battery pack which sits down at your waist.
That's right.
Or wherever.
That's right.
You want to put it. And it's also $3,500 US. Kitchen.
Well, yeah, exactly. But also the transition between with the cameras where it will show you what the real world looks like. Because let's be honest, it's not augmented reality in the sense that you can see through it.
Yeah.
It's augmented reality in the fact that it sends you a picture of what's outside. The reviews I've heard is exceptionally good. The transition between the two is beautiful, and it works really, really, really well. So look, we've been on a virtual reality, augmented reality, I don't know, roller coaster for probably the last 10 years since the early days with the really big headsets. And we've gotten better and better and better. I think they still haven't solved some of the problems, but with the eye tracking, it's getting much better and much easier to use. But if you had asked me last year if we were going to see AI, we were going to see at the end of 2023, Google's new Gemini launched, and I've played with Gemini, and it's easily as good as GPT-4 from a large language model. And if you had asked me mid-year last year if we were going to see the proliferation of AI agents, multimodal AI, and even starting to see, you know, RAG status within search, and most of the data science geeks or professors are now saying that they expect artificial general intelligence by no later than 2030. And that's a shrinkage down. So we might be looking at VR and AR finally hitting its stride and coming into the mainstream consumption. So
yeah, so we're going to have to reduce price quite a lot, and we're going to have to make a real increase in the consumability of augmented reality. And I think that's the big thing that Apple haven't quite achieved here. The augmented reality, you know, the ability to take your device everywhere you go and literally have it start to say something useful about the world around you. And once we do that, and maybe couple that with virtual reality, so when you're away from real life, you know, that's when you start going, right, okay, now this is something that Google tried to do with Google Glass. You know, going back to, when was it Google Glass started that? That was a long time ago, right?
Yeah, it was quite a while ago. And by the way, the product still exists.
Yeah.
But they only sell it to manufacturers and to people that do warehouses and stuff.
So why isn't it successful? What happened there? Why is Google Glass?
Well, there was a commercial level backlash. This idea that you had a set of glasses on your face that had a camera that could record what you're looking at. There was a privacy level in the US that was just massive backlash.
Yeah.
That everyone... But at the same time, we have, what is it, the Snap glasses that you can get that have the camera on them. So you can take your Snapchats and upload them
I mean, we've got that now. I mean, Apple's Vision is doing that. You know, the Ray-Bans that I can't remember what they're called, but Meta's Ray-Bans that they've released with Ray-Ban, they do that now. There's the Rewind thing, or there's a whole bunch of products out there that are doing just this already. So Google may have been the first to market, and that caused a lot of that backlash. But it would be interesting to see what
much more acceptable
if Google released it now. Would they get more acceptable?
Well, there's a Canadian startup company that has a massive, you can actually pre-buy the glasses, but they're doing that. It's almost a Google Glass-like glass, and they even will do prescription glasses if you wear prescription glasses. And yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think it was just because it was so ahead of its time.
Yeah.
But now everybody's just accepting. I mean, I was at a casino over the weekend. I don't gamble, but I was staying in the hotel. And if you had asked me 10 years ago in a casino, if it was okay to pull out your phone and take a picture or take a video, absolutely not.
Mm.
The casino, the security would have come over and escorted you out of that casino in a heartbeat. No one's allowed to take pictures or videos of what's going on in that casino. On Saturday, there were literally hundreds of people taking pictures and videos on their cameras all the time. In fact, I watched one guy sit there and he was playing roulette. And he would take a picture of what was put on the roulette table before the ball went, and then he videoed the ball going, and nobody said anything to him.
Right. So there we go. We're in a world which is transitioning the level of acceptability from where we were, you know, even 5 years ago, now into a world where that's going to become the norm. And if we take a step back for a moment, do we ask ourselves, hey, is this scary? And should we say no to that? You know, the answer, who knows, right?
Yeah.
But the thing is, it's happening. And the same thing is happening in the space with AI right now. It's we're charging ahead at such a fast pace, and lots of people are going, hey, should we have a question about this? But the reality is, no one person can be told, put the pause on this. Not even OpenAI with ChatGPT, because if you did that, somebody else is going to raise their head and finish the equation.
So pause, I think... You and I are in agreement. There's no way you can pause development of it. If one company could think, I'm going to pause our company, but outside of that, it's not going to happen. But the next step is regulation. So we saw the very first rollout of an approved regulation in the EU. We saw President Biden in the States announce a presidential order to do with AI and the development of AI for the United States. We are seeing Singapore has rolled out regulation. China has rolled out regulation for AI. So we are not a pause, but we are now starting to see it being taken. And in fact, at Davos, the number one thing they talked about was AI.
Yeah,
so,
which is crazy. I mean, it's usually not used for that sort of thing, right? That's we don't
talk about technology.
Tech.
Yeah. Even when chips were the big thing, I think at Davos, they were talking about the politics and maybe the logistics and maybe the business. But now they're actually having discussions about AI, and literally the number one job role that companies are now trying to fill is head of AI, because they have seen the writing on the table and they know if they don't do something with AI, their competitors are going to.
Yeah, absolutely. So it is this freight train coming, and it's not going to stop. And the regulation is it going to be good enough? And who knows what skunk work stuff is going on in the background as well. Yeah. And then outside of the countries that are regulated, which is the EU and the US, are they going to become safe havens for AI
bad actors
that shouldn't? And so we need some sort of global response to this. And we all know that that's not going to happen. So it's going to be a very, very interesting, air quotes, time in the next 5 years as we see AI mature.
Yeah, well, and I think, you know, you and I talked about this because we did an episode on AI last season. And one of the things we talked about was the scary thing about AI is that it's happening much faster than any other technology beforehand. I mean, if in all fairness, if we go back and look at the internet, when the internet was first rolling out, we thought, oh my God, this is happening so much faster than, you know, anything that's ever happened before. But now I look back on that internet stuff and I go, wow, that was slow.
Yeah.
Compared to what we're seeing in AI. Yeah. And it really is landscape changing. We have a guest coming up in a couple episodes that's going to literally, we're going to dive into what AI means for business. And what the future of that looks like. So very much looking forward to that podcast.
Yeah, can't wait for that. That's going to be great. So yeah, awesome.
Yeah. So the job market.
Yeah.
We saw a massive turmoil in the job market last year. Big companies across the US and Europe laying off hundreds of thousands of employees, giant reduction, and except in two areas, AI and cybersecurity. Those two areas were the only ones that we didn't see extensive layoffs. Now, what does that mean for this year? The job market outside of AI and cybersecurity, the job market's still going to be hot. And all the companies, in my opinion, are going to continue to be hiring. But I don't know what it looks like for everything else. We are seeing the economic are starting to get a little bit better.
Yeah.
So the stock markets around the world are starting to slide a little bit upward a little bit.
I think there's a number of variables in all of this, which I've thought about quite a lot. And so variable number one, if we look back in time, usually you can start to make predictions in the financial markets, but this one is a bit different and we can't make predictions on it so well. But if we look back in the sort of 2000s, we had the dot-com bubble bursting. So that was like late 1999, early 2000. And basically, people up until then were hiring like Microsoft and IBM and all these venture capitalists were just pouring money into companies and just saying, hey, if you've got a tech company and you want to go online with that business, here's a whole bunch of cash. And when the reality finally hit that those organizations weren't really working out, when those companies weren't really producing what they said they were going to do. So it was a bit of snake oil in there, I guess. What happened there is that there were lots of layoffs. Now, if we extrapolate that a lot out into 2023, then I think there's a lot of organizations that had a lot of fat on them because they'd hired things. So if there was actually, you know, confirmations in companies like Microsoft and Google where they would hire people just so the opposite company couldn't hire them. And so that adds a lot to your bottom line. If you're literally hiring somebody just because you don't want them to work for the competition, right? So that...
Well, and I remember, so 3 years ago, people were getting hired at very high salary rates. You could ask, I had a graduate student that interviewed back when you and I were at Cognizant.
Yeah.
And the graduate student looked at me, he said, okay, within the first year, I'm going to be a senior, right? And I should be making X dollar amount. And I looked at him and I was like, well, I mean, anything's possible. Yes, you can come in and you can be spectacular and become a senior and making that dollar amount, but that's not common.
Mm.
And he was just like, well, if you can't guarantee me that, I'm not interested in the role.
That's right.
And that was the expectation.
That. And that was here in New Zealand. In the US and parts of the EU, it was even worse than that. But yeah, there was ridiculous salaries. People were just hiring. So there's a lot of that. And then we had COVID. And so the governments across the world were propping up the workplace just to make sure that everything just didn't collapse wholesale.
Right.
So you had the governments all providing this artificial bench, propping everybody up, I guess. And so there was a number of things. And then there was some sort of more emergency related funding for things like that as well. So it was no wonder that eventually the economy kind of went, you know, and it was just a flattened pancake and we had big problems with the economy. And so then we've had a perfect storm of COVID removal of funding. We've had inflation going up. We've had organizations going at that point, looking at the bottom line going, right, we've got this expectation from our shareholders, which is this very high number because we targeted year-on-year growth. And, you know, back when we were in 2021, we expected to have year-on-year growth that looked better than the year before. But all of these variables came into play, like COVID and all the rest, and they weren't taking those into account properly. And so they said year-on-year growth, hold on. And the only way to resolve those problems to make sure that they could meet their shareholders' expectation is to cut the fat. So that's what I basically think is what's been happening. It's been a lot of right-sizing of organizations. And that sounds harsh. And a lot of people who have been relatively good staff have gone.
Yep.
But if you think about the size of the organizations out there, they really should be leaner. Because Elon Musk came along to Twitter, as it was called then, and he said, hey, I don't need all of these people. This is a social network website that does this, right? I don't need all of these servers. Why are these servers here? Let's cut them all down. You know, there's a lot of fat that was needing trimmed. Now, whether you agree with Elon Musk or not, I mean, I don't agree with all the things that guy does. But and they've had a few performance issues. But by and large, if you go onto X as it is now, it still works. And yeah, they've cut, I think, 2/3 of their workforce. So what that makes you kind of wonder, and all the different CEOs have not thought, they've observed this and they've gone, hey, that might make sense. You know, if I cut 2/3 of my staff from X and it still operates, can I do something even a tenth of the workforce at Microsoft or Cisco or IBM, Salesforce? Can that still happen over there? And the answer is probably yes. So I think that's what happened at the start of, or the late part of 22, and then started really ramping up all the way through 2023. And now we're probably getting towards the end of it. I would like to, that would be my prediction.
Yeah, I think we've cut to the bone. I think what's happened is that we're now down at a level where I think some companies are at risk to be able to meet their commitments.
Yeah.
Like there may still be some fat there around certain areas, but I think that they're short. They're not going to be able to meet every commitment that they've made. And so I think my prediction as well is that we're going to start to see some hiring. But I think there are a lot of companies out there that are going to go, well, AI is going to fix all this by the end of the year, and I don't need to hire. They're going to find that they're wrong, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But that's still going, some of the companies out there are going to take that tack.
Yeah, I mean, like IBM, I think, were the first big company that said they were going to basically outsource all of their frontline jobs, their sort of entry-level jobs to AI. And I said to myself, no chance. I mean, maybe you'll get 10% of those jobs to AI because their workforce is huge. And I think they needed to scale down, but they're not going to see that sort of implemented in the aggressive scale that they expected. No.
Not even if we see AGI by the end of the year, even if we saw a narrow form of AGI, and I know for those AI people out there that I just mixed narrow AI and AGI, I understand that. I did that on purpose. Even if we see a very immature version of AGI by the end of this year, we're not going to see a massive job replacement by AGI anytime soon.
All of these things take time to get into a cycle. You've got to basically get those technologies right for your workforce, for your organizational needs, and implementation of all of that is not something you can do overnight. That's going to take a year or two at the least just to get that, not the technology, but just the actual implementation, if you will.
Well, all the companies are scrambling right now to do just that for search and for chatbots and for, you know, the low-hanging fruit that you and I would say, this is ripe for automation. And AI-driven automation, this is ripe for it.
Yeah.
Companies are scrambling to figure out how to do that now. And very big companies with very big bankrolls are struggling to get it across the line. So the idea that AGI is going to come in and replace jobs is not very realistic.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, look, there are some other things that we didn't have time for today. For example, there is the fact that over the last year, it started in the US, but it's kind of become a global question, and that's about cybersecurity and specifically CISOs and their responsibility to the board. So when CISOs started off, they were just glorified IT security managers or even just IT managers, and that has changed into now being a position on the board, reports directly to the board. But a lot of the CISOs with things like Uber, and also the SolarWinds problems. There was a lot of really big, high-profile cases last year that caused the Securities and Exchange Commission to go off and investigate those. So don't have time for that one, but basically just to say that the cybersecurity aspect of organizations is kind of coming under a very close lens now, even more so. So what does this mean for CISOs? Very interesting question. There's also more... focus on what's going on in cyberspace, in cybersecurity, with growing DDoS attacks from the Russians and also China as well. There's many, many things like that. And then finally was the return to work, what we're seeing around remote work. So that's something we might be able to talk about in a future podcast. So if you are interested in any particular one of those topics, or as Sean said, any of the topics that you've got in your mind and like to hear more of those thoughts demystified, then please let us know. So stay tuned, people, because that podcast is going to be really good. And it's from a really important business leader who, you know, has the chops to predict what that sort of stuff is going to be. And if you haven't listened to our podcast with Tim Warren last season, go back through the podcast and listen to that, because Tim had some really, really interesting insights and some really great questions to think of for yourself as we go into this world. Now, Tim ran the AI startup in New Zealand called Ambit. It was probably New Zealand's biggest name in AI to date. So it'll be really interesting to see.
I think Tim actually, I want to say about a week ago, Tim pinged me, and I'm supposed to be doing coffee with him in a couple of weeks, but I think he'd like to come back on as well. And that'd be good, because Tim actually, he was a visionary, and it was funny because people were telling him, nah, it's not going to be that big now. And he's like, oh, no, it's going to be really big. And of course, Ambit has been massively successful. And now Tim is being sought. He's been in several magazines and he's been at several conferences. So speaking about where we're going for this year, I know that you are going to be massively busy working, because I have some idea of the client list that you have coming in at within your company. I'm going to be presenting at 3 or 4 different conferences this year. We'll make sure that we let everybody know what those conferences are. And if you see me in a conference and you listen to the Technology Whispers, come up, I'll buy you a beer.
Yeah, we're not shy.
Coffee.
Yeah.
We love the fact that somebody actually listens to us and we're not just doing this to talk to each other. But we've got an exciting year coming up this season, and the plan is to get podcasts out every fortnight. And if you have an idea about a subject that you're like, yeah, I'd really like to understand about X, whatever it is, maybe, oh God, I hope we don't have, somebody doesn't ask us to demystify Twitter. If somebody asks us to demystify Twitter, Alistair, we might have to say
we're
no
screwed.
To that one.
Yeah. Getting into the brains of Elon Musk, nobody can do that.
No.
I defy anybody that can do that. Yeah.
But yeah, reach out to us. We're always open for suggestions. If you'd like to be a guest and you have something you want to talk about, more than welcome to come on board. Alistair and I love talking with other fellow technophiles. Can we say that? Technophiles?
Hey, yeah, why not? Yeah, sure. Yeah. Technophiles.
Alistair, so what do you got going on this year?
Okay, well, so in Revolution InfoSec, which is the business that I'm the managing director of, I guess, the main thing is about trying to understand what makes a business tick. And I think that's the really important thing that some of the other cybersecurity businesses aren't doing. They're not really centered around you as a business. So I guess that I'm trying to fill that hole and say, look, if you want to tell us what you do as a business, tell us what appetite you have to risk, and then tell us what would keep you up at night. Then we can start working from there. And some of those risks will be related in some way to cybersecurity. And some people don't really think about cybersecurity. They think about technical things. But in a lot of the cases, things are about people and policies and processes. A lot of the issues that we have in cybersecurity start within those three areas. And so looking at how we govern those aspects really starts the whole chain of things in cybersecurity going. So really that's where I've been working with a lot of businesses on. I've been working with some large named institutions in the financial sector and the insurance sector to really just help them with, for example, policy, governance, risk and compliance is really that whole, when you hear that term GRC, that's what it is, governance, risk and compliance. So a lot of the work that I start to do with our clients is in that GRC space. And then obviously, if there are recommendations at the end of that that require things like, you know, security testing, penetration testing, for example, or vulnerability assessments, those are the sort of areas that we've gone on to help with. For example, we've got our own vulnerability assessment solution that's New Zealand born and bred, and that's gone down really well. So I'd be keen to help any organization out with that. But yeah, exactly. It's all about human beings and working with them first. So we're just ramping up big time with all of that. Sean, how do people get in touch with you if they want to get in touch and talk about the podcast or basically anything else?
Yeah, so I'm on all the social medias. If you look for Sean G. Muller, S-E-A-N-G, M-U-L-L-E-R. I'm on the Facebooks and the X's and the Instagrams and the Tumblrs and the everythings. But you can reach me at Sean G. Muller at technologyleader.co.nz. Yep, I'm always here. Alistair, how can people reach out to you?
Thanks, Sean, for that great OSINT integration that I'll be doing. I'll anybody into cybersecurity, just search for Sean G. Muller. and you get your hit there. So yeah, so anybody wants to get me, so head out to revolutioninfosec.com. That's the business over there. You get all the details about what we do. You can also search for me on linkedin.com. Just search for Alistair J. Ross. And yeah, I've got various stuff on YouTube and Twitter as well. So that's it. Thank you again for listening to this episode one of series three of the Technology Whisperers. We'll be back again in 2 weeks' time. Until then, take care and thanks for listening.